Instead of focusing on vengeance, as many of them wanted to, Jesus is focusing on restoration. And they could not handle the fact that God was their sole possession. He proclaims the year of the Lord's favor, not just to Israel, but to all who come to faith in him. Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread through the whole countryside. He was teaching in their synagogues, and everyone praised him. He went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath day he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. He began by saying to them, "Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." All spoke well of him and were amazed by the gracious words that came from his lips. "Isn't this Joseph's son?" they asked. Jesus said to them, "Surely you will quote this proverb to me, 'Physician, heal yourself.' And you will tell me, 'Do here in your hometown what we have heard that you did in Capernaum.' Truly I tell you," he continued, "no prophet is accepted in his hometown. I assure you that there were many widows in Israel in Elijah's time, when the sky was shut for 3.5 years and there was a severe famine throughout the land. Yet Elijah was not sent to any of them, but to a widow in Zarephath in the region of Sidon. And there were many in Israel with leprosy in the time of Elisha, the prophet, yet none of them were cleansed, only Naaman, the Syrian." All the people in the synagogue were furious when they heard this. They got up, drove him out of the town, and took him to the brow of the hill which the town was built in order to throw him off the cliff. But he walked right through the crowd and went on his way. So Jesus comes out of the wilderness where he has been not eating and being tempted by Satan. And he comes into Galilee. And apparently Luke actually jumps a little bit in the time, and then we'll come back a little bit later to Capernaum, where actually Jesus goes there first. And it seems he performs a bunch of miracles there. And then he returns to his hometown. And this is all happening in the region of Galilee, from which Jesus is from. Galilee is up to the north of Jerusalem, and it's actually made up of a mixture of Jewish people and non-Jewish people who the Bible call Gentiles. There's much more of a mixture up there than there is to the south in Jerusalem itself, which is mostly of Jewish people. And it is mostly a poor region filled with poor farmers. And this is where Jesus grew up. He grew up probably learning the trade of his father, because that's what all good Jewish boys did during that time. So he grew up amongst these people in Nazareth, learning to be a carpenter, just as his father was. But now he has returned home, and people have heard rumor of what he has done in Capernaum. And what usually happened in synagogues is there would be teachers or rabbis that would travel around, and if you had a rabbi that came and visited your synagogue or your church, basically, that they would have that guest come and teach because he was educated. Especially when you're in a poor town like Nazareth, the rabbis probably didn't travel up there all that often, and it would have been a small synagogue. And so now Jesus comes and he gets the ability to teach in his hometown. And so he comes and he reads from the book of Isaiah, and it's a message that goes down really well with these people. "The Spirit of the Lord is on me because the Lord has anointed me." Jesus is proclaiming that he has given authority as a prophet to speak God's words. And so he is speaking God's words to them. Good start. "To proclaim good news to the poor." Nazareth is filled with poor people, so they are excited to hear some good news to them. "To proclaim freedom for the prisoners." So Israel is under the authority of Rome, and they want nothing more than to be their own independent nation once again, to throw off the oppressive Roman Empire. And they really wanted this because a lot of the promises in the earlier part of the Bible in the Old Testament, they interpreted as hindering on this point that they needed to be their own nation. And so when they hear freedom for the prisoners, they have this mindset that they're all prisoners. And so freedom for them, freedom from Rome, sounds great. They keep saying amen to everything Jesus is saying so far. Recovery of sight for the blind, whether physical blindness, which Jesus healed, or the spiritual blindness. These is good news for people to be able to see things literally, but also to be able to see God. This is what they are yearning for as well. And then when it comes to the last part, Jesus actually changes the passage a little bit. He omits something that's in the original Isaiah. Well, he preaches it to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. In Isaiah, it says that the Isaiah verse he's quoting is in chapter 61, and it's verses 1 to 2. It goes on to say, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God. And Jesus makes this cut with a very intended purpose, which his audience doesn't quite get right away. But when they get it, they get angry, as we will see later in this passage. And so after reading this, Jesus sits down and he says that this has been fulfilled in your hearing, that he is the person that Isaiah was talking about. He's been anointed to proclaim all these things and to bring in the year of the Lord's favor. And the people are amazed and excited by Jesus. He speaks with such wisdom and authority and power. But some were still a little hesitant. There's still a little hesitancy in the back of their mind because they knew Jesus growing up. They knew him as a boy. They knew his father, Joseph, who had built things for them and helped them build their homes. And Jesus very likely helped his father do that for some of them. They know his brothers and his sister and his mother who still live among him. How can this boy that they've seen grow up from Nazareth be the one to free them from the great big, bad, evil Roman Empire? But also, they've heard these rumors of what happened in Capernaum. People who were blind being healed, people who couldn't walk being able to stand up and walk, demons being cast out of people. And so they think, well, surely those rumors are true. If Jesus did those things in Capernaum, which is actually more Gentiles than Jewish people, then surely he will do that and even greater things here in his hometown of Nazareth. And Jesus had obviously heard these rumors and decided to address them. And he also saw they didn't quite get the point of his earlier message. They actually missed the point of part of the reason why he started doing things in Capernaum. They enjoyed the words of his teaching, but didn't take him seriously enough, because they had known him when he was young. So instead of Jesus giving them miracles, he reiterated his previous point, which, I mean, it's fair that they missed it because it was really just a point by omission. He was a little subtle with it. This time, he's not so subtle. He says, when Elijah was prophet in Israel, only one person was provided for. So Elijah is prophet during this King Ahab in Israel, and King Ahab has been worshiping a false god, a god that isn't the God of Israel. And so as punishment, through Elijah, God causes a drought, which leads to a famine because there's no rain for like 3.5 years. And so all of Israel is running out of food and starving because of the unfaithfulness of Ahab. Elijah is sent to one person, a woman in a foreign city, and he gives her a miracle where she gets her jar of oil never runs out. And so she's provided for. She can sell it to buy more food. She can use it to make bread, that kind of stuff. Not an Israelite, a Gentile, a woman who is non-Jewish in a foreign city. And then he talks about Elisha, who comes after Elijah. And their names are so similar that they're a pain in the butt to preach about together. But Elisha takes over the ministry, and Jesus said there's lots of lepers all throughout Israel, but the only one that Elisha heals is this guy Naaman, who's not only not an Israelite, he's a Syrian, but he's also a general for an army that is attacking the nation of Israel. And he is healed of his leprosy, but no one in Israel is. And so these two stories bring home the message that Jesus is trying to say to those in Nazareth. Jesus wasn't about to meet their expectations. When Israel had thought about this prophesied Messiah, this anointed one that was going to come and deliver them, the image that they had in the mind was this human king who is sent by God that was going to come in and raise up an army, kick out the oppressive nation, in this case Rome, set themselves up as king, and create Israel as its own earthly nation again, ushering in a golden age, much like King David had brought in the Old Testament as well. And when this happened, God would bring justice down on all who were dared to not be an Israelite. All those Gentiles, that's where Isaiah's vengeance comes in. But instead of focusing on vengeance, as many of them wanted to, Jesus is focusing on restoration. Jesus starts performing miracles in the town that has more Gentiles than Israelites. He then omits the line about God's vengeance against the Gentiles, instead choosing to focus on the year of the Lord's favor, which is also known in the Old Testament as Jubilee, a time when all the slaves were supposed to be released, all debts were supposed to be forgiven, and all ancestral land was to be given back to those Israelites who had lived there before, or at least their families. This is the year of the Lord's favor, and it's truly good news for the poor, because often you were in slavery if you were an Israelite to another Israelite because you owed them a lot of money, and so you're working it off, which also is good news for the poor because all your debts are then forgiven as well. And if you had to sell off your farm, it's given back to you. It's really good news for the poor. But by omitting this line about vengeance and saying that this doesn't necessarily mean that there's also going to be vengeance against all who are non-Israelites, Jesus seems to be suggesting that this Lord's favor might just be for Gentiles as well. And then he affirms this point by showing that a woman in Sidon and a Syrian general were the ones who were healed and provided for during great famine in Israel, not Israelites, to show that God was even working towards this larger goal of including people outside of Israel in his kingdom. It's a Latin American theologian who says it really well. His name's Dario Rodriguez. He says, due to the provincial mentality and the cultural and religious ethnocentrism of his audience, so he uses a lot of big words there, but it gets easier as you go on, it turned out to be extremely offensive and shocking that the son of Joseph publicly declared that two non-Jews, a pagan woman from Zarephath and a leper of Syrian origin, were human beings worthy of God's love. But the intention of Luke's account was more than that. The idea behind the reference to these two foreigners is that from the time of the Old Testament, it was already clear that God was not the exclusive property of any one culture, people, or race. So it is super offensive to Israelites that God would not, in the end, destroy those who were not like them. They could not handle the fact that God would love people that they hate, and they could not handle the fact that God was their sole possession, that God desired more than just Israel. And they hate this message so much that they chase Jesus to the edge of the cliff to try to throw him off of it. It was a complete 180 because they were all very excited about his message in the first place until he decided to elaborate a little bit and throw him off a cliff. So Luke takes this whole story and he puts it at the beginning of his tale about Jesus. He talks about it before the miracles that actually happened first, apparently. And the reason that Luke does this is he's setting up the theme of what he sees Jesus' ministry on earth to emphasize. What Jesus preaches from Isaiah and says he comes to fulfill throughout his ministry. He proclaims the good news of God's kingdom to the poor and the marginalized. He proclaims freedom from slavery of sin through his death and his resurrection. And he heals people of their illnesses and disabilities. He proclaims the year of the Lord's favor, all these things, release from captivity, these healings, the arrival of God's kingdom here on earth, not just to Israel, but to all who come to faith in him. And he doesn't just proclaim these things, but he starts living them out. He calls uneducated fishermen and evil tax collectors to come and follow him and be his followers. He eats constantly in the home of prostitutes and speaks with the hated Samaritans, all these people that the religious leaders did not dare associate with, would not speak a word to, because they were viewed as sinners and the type of people that God would be coming and putting his vengeance upon when he returned. And then as Jesus rises from the dead and spends some time with his disciples, he ascends into heaven, and the church then continues on what Jesus was doing. And they continue to proclaim God's favor for all. It was in home churches that you would see Jews worshiping next to Gentiles, the poor worshiping with the rich, the slave worshiping with the slave owner. There wasn't anywhere else in society where you were seeing this happen. And it was not an easy thing to do. The majority of the letters that we have in the New Testament are because there was lots of problems in trying to merge all these types of people together. It was very, very messy. And so these letters are written to churches saying, okay, this is what you need to understand about these people. This is what you need to understand about these people. This is what God is doing. And this is why we are doing this complicated, messy, living life together thing. And so they saw it as worth trying to do. They embraced the mess because they saw that it was good news for all of them. And it continues to be good news for us today. So there's kind of a long range question that we can ask ourselves now. The first one actually is both short and long range. If you were to hear from Jesus that the person you hate, the person you can't stand, the person who annoys you the most was just who he wanted in his kingdom, how would you feel? Because that person is who Jesus wants in his kingdom. I struggle with this at times because we currently live next to quite a few very loud neighbors. And at 2 a.m. when you're trying to sleep, it's really hard to wish that person into the kingdom. But that's the kind of person that Jesus wants in the kingdom. What if there were a bunch of people who wanted to call Pemberton Community Church home that weren't exactly like you and perhaps were people that you walked in the street and thought were incredibly rude and didn't like very much? Because it is God's desire for the kingdom for all. It says people of every tribe, language, and nation are going to sit at his table in the kingdom. And so sometimes some of the long range things is how do these doors open when we can have more than 30-ish or however many of you are in here, and we can sit right next to someone we don't know, however long that's going to be. But how can we be welcoming to even those that we don't like particularly much or we don't think really belong here because God thinks they belong here? How can we open our homes, not just to our friends, do open your home to your friends still, but also to those who are poor and those who are marginalized and maybe even those we don't belong with very well, to be able to give that good news that Jesus proclaims to them. You know, when it's safe to do so. That's the long range. The short range is probably a little more complicated. How do we do those things now, when we can't just rely on this beautiful, gorgeous building with a beautiful, gorgeous view and just open the doors and say, everyone come in and hear the word of the Lord? How do we proclaim the year of the Lord's favor, especially in a time that doesn't seem particularly favorable, without just simply saying, hey, come to church with me on Sunday? How can we safely bring people into our homes, or how can we safely show hospitality to people, the love of Jesus, in a safe way? So the challenge for us in all situations, it doesn't go on pause because there's a global pandemic, is to be as Jesus was, be good news to the poor, be good news to the captive, and to the blind, because Jesus is good news to them. And he uses us to bring God's favor, God's kingdom here to earth.